Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Pop Culture Ninja. I'm Nathan here with Nathan. Nathan, what's going on?
Well, we have a guest.
We
do.
Another
guest.
I know. This is pretty exciting, man. This
is
our fourth. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. Well, minus recycled guests.
That's true. Yep, that's true. So, yeah, super excited. Ian Racetrick joining us. Ian, how are you?
Hey, good fellas. How you doing?
Doing well. You are a local comic book store manager, Casey Comics, here in Fallston, Maryland, correct?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Friends, family, what you do.
Not married or no kids or anything like that, but I do a lot of gaming and I do a lot of the comic stuff. I have my personal collections pretty huge.
Nice.
About 75 long boxes, but I've been collecting comics since 1994, and I started working part-time at Casey's over 10 years ago, and I'm there pretty much Tuesday through Saturday now, and yeah, I enjoy comics, and that's all.
That's all there is.
Yeah, that's all there is to it.
Nice. Tell us a little bit about the store. I've been there a couple times. Really neat store. Nice selection. Go ahead and talk that up a little bit for guests out there, because one of the reasons why you're on here is you have a great knowledge base. And so we want to exploit that. We like to use people.
It's the same word I was going to use. Very, very fine word.
But in exchange, we also want you to talk up what you do and talk up the store. So
okay.
Feel free.
We have a pretty healthy back issue selection. 100 long boxes. So a lot of those are dollar and 50-cent comics. We have a lot of big sets and runs and miniseries and things like that. We package them. So if you're looking for something to read, it's a lot easier if you get the whole thing in one fell swoop than having to piece it together. And you know, we've got a fair number of older 60s, 70s books too, Keys, Silver Age, things like that. And you know, we have the trade paperbacks, toys, statues, all that fun stuff too. But we're like an old-fashioned store where you have a lot of the back issue boxes, and it's not all fancy and shiny, but you know, it's we're for people that like comics more than people that
like comic things.
Yes.
I really appreciate that, because that's what I kind of miss is the comic book stores. You just go through and you're like rummaging through boxes and boxes of comics. So how's your Squirrel Girl collection?
It's not huge.
It's just quality, not quantity.
Yes.
That's great.
Before she shows up and wins the war and in the Infinity War series, we just need to be prepared.
So. That's right.
Well, the rumor is that they're doing a new Mute Warriors TV show and that she'll be on that.
Yeah, there's a lot of places they can put her in, because, I mean, we now have Luke Cage on Netflix.
Yeah.
And we have Jessica Jones, and she was their babysitter for a while.
Yes.
So, she fits perfectly in that nice, gritty, downbeat world.
That's awesome.
And she has defeated Thanos in the comics.
So. Yeah, and Dr. Doom.
And Dr. Doom. I remember the, like, panel where he's covered in squirrels and flailing about.
I believe in the last series she beat Galactus, if I'm not mistaken. So.
I think she befriended him. And thus kind of used him to her gain. So it was like, you know, sometimes people just need an ear to listen. You know?
Squirrel Girl. Oh, my goodness. And Ian, when I stopped in your store, I was actually really impressed, not just with the selection, but you've got a really cool kind of mailbox system going on there.
Oh, yes. We do a subscription service where, you know, if you want to get one title a month or 50 titles a month, we'll pull them when they come out every week and keep them on the side for you, so you don't have miss anything. Mm-hmm. Hopefully,
yeah, nice. And you also have a Facebook page, which we are going to link to the podcast, so it'll be in the show notes in the podcast. So as people are listening, they can click over there and like you on Facebook.
Okay.
Yeah. Can people generally communicate with you through Facebook? Are you pretty up on communication wise there, or what's the best way?
Best way to get in touch with us is stop by or give us a call at 410-877-3152. You can send us a message on Facebook, too. We prefer doing stuff more person-to-person because we're old-fashioned that way, I guess. And we still don't completely trust internet and things like that. So.
Okay, fair enough. So Facebook you use mainly for just kind of promotional stuff in the community at large to communicate with one another. Sweet. And actually, that's good to know because what we're going to do is at the end of the podcast, we're going to announce a giveaway. We have you actually helped me pick these out, Ian. So it's the first issue of Doctor Strange. Is it the new?
Of the current series.
The current series. Yes. Okay. And then it's also the 5 books from the Illuminati series.
Yes.
Correct? So we're going to go ahead and give those away for we'll do 3 iTunes reviews, and then we'll do 2 retweets on Twitter. So if you retweet on Twitter, we'll go ahead and, put you in the pool for that. And then iTunes, same thing. You know, if you send us a review on iTunes, we'll go ahead and we will shoot you one of those. If we have 3 people do iTunes reviews, all 3 will get them. If it's more than that, then we'll go ahead and you'll just be put in a pool and a drawing will occur. And we're hoping actually that those people who win those comic books, if you guys kind of network and hook up through that Facebook, then you'll be able to connect and exchange those Illuminati books so that, you know, you'll be able to read through the series and kind of trade on and off through your winning. So hoping to, build up KC Comics Facebook there. As Ian said, you can go ahead and give them a call or stop on by and hook yourselves up that way. So, and, you know, tell you from personal experience, our listeners from personal experience, Ian is a really knowledgeable guy. We're going to get to his knowledge base in just a second here, but super knowledgeable and had a great time. Spent, like half hour, 45 minutes with you the other day just talking about comics and got a huge education. I don't consider myself a novice with comics, but definitely got an education. So really appreciate your knowledge base there. Nathan, any other thoughts before we dive right into our content?
Yeah. Ian, is there anything coming up at KC Comics? You guys do any sorts of events or anything coming up that you may want to mention or plug?
We haven't worked out all the details yet. We'll be doing a something for Halloween.
Oh, very cool.
Nice.
The Halloween's, I guess, a Monday this year, so there'll be something going on Saturday and Sunday. There'll be a sale and some giveaway things and stuff like that. We haven't knocked it all out yet, but
they're going to be kid friendly.
Oh yeah,
cool. Yeah. I have 2 little kids who love comic books. Now they're still more in the, you know, Mega Man and Sonic the Hedgehog stages, but they enjoy comics.
Good. So. Awesome. So yeah, once we get some information on that, we'll plug that on our Facebook and Twitter as well. So just get that out there.
Another question, which I guess is probably just delving into kind of what we're talking about: are there titles right now, Ian, that you're really into that you would say would be essential or you would recommend for people out there who are maybe reading comics? Maybe they're outside of the normal mainstream that everybody expects, but
all of them.
I'll need you to elaborate.
Series that besides like your obvious, your Batmans and your Amazing Spider-Mans and stuff like that, generally decent things. Oddly enough, sales on Action Comics and Superman, the 2 main Superman books, they've not been great over the years, but DC just relaunched or is in the process of relaunching their whole line. And the Action Comics, which is, you know, was the original Superman book, that one's really fun, as is the main Superman book. It's a different dynamic. Superman and Lois are married and they have a son who has superpowers. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of fun. It's more family friendly than most typical superhero fare these days. I mean, things like Batman and Spider-Man, they're not bad for kids, but some of it might be a little iffy for like your 6 or 7 year old. Mm-hmm. But the Superman book, I'd say, is probably safe.
That's kind of a nice, I kind of like that direction though, because in the movies and everything, they've been trying to push Superman darker, which I don't personally think works that well.
Yes, the DC relaunched 5 years ago. It was called New 52, and the Superman, it was a darker take on him to some extent, and they've gone like a 180 from that character, and it's basically, oh yeah, Superman with a kid and wife, and yeah, it's the opposite direction of what a lot of comic things do, because when a character's married and has kids, things like that, the comic companies tend to feel that it ages the character and makes it less accessible to younger readers.
I don't want to grow up and be a father.
My thought to that is, I think the median comic reader is probably early 30s, so reading about like a married Superman, it's probably mirroring their own life to some extent.
Mm-hmm. I prefer the married Superman to the Superman that knows he has a kid but just hangs outside his window. I guess that was a nice approach, but I remember reading a review around the time that Superman Returns came out, or was that Superman Returns?
Yes. Yeah.
Came out that someone said, you know, as a kid, I always secretly hoped that Superman was my dad, but at the same time, I thought the Superman was above being anybody's secret dad.
Well, that movie is no longer exists.
So. It's been replaced by new cruddier Superman movie.
It's a Superman that kills people indiscriminately. It's a lot more fun.
I thought the best Superman movie would feature Otis Berg.
From Marvel, the new Doctor Strange book, it's good stuff. Daredevil has been a pretty fun book. That's been the case for several years now. It's a pretty dark story going on right now with it. But other than, like I said earlier, the traditional things like, oh yeah, everyone knows Spider-Man, which the last few issues of Amazing Spider-Man have been very good. They're building up to a big story called Clone Conspiracy, where a lot of people are coming back from the dead. It's pretty interesting stuff. Marvel has also the Star Wars comic license. Mm. And the main Star Wars book is very, very good. The Darth Vader book, which unfortunately is ending in a few weeks with issue 25. But once all said and done, I think it'll be 5 trade paperbacks or a couple hardcovers. But it's the best comic I read every month. Mm. Most of the Marvel Star Wars stuff takes place between episodes 4 and 5, and it's Vader like doing stuff behind the Emperor's back, and there's a lot of backstabbing and things like that. They introduce a lot of new interesting characters.
The stuff with he and his kids is a little different, isn't it?
Yeah.
That tends to be a little darker.
Yeah. But bar none, it's my favorite book every month. And the book I'd recommend for people who are not really used to comics, but it's more an adult book. You don't give it to your kids, but it's called Saga. It's very, very good book. It's kind of a space Romeo and Juliet
meets White Chicks. Yeah. No. It's a good classic space opera with some darker, more adult tones, but it's very well written.
Yeah.
A friend of ours that we've had on the podcast, Chris, a couple times, he actually has Saga tattooed on his arm.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, okay. So it's a good, that's an awesome choice.
Then when a customer comes in who's, you know, not a kid, and they say, I'm new to comics, what should I read? And they don't want to read superhero stuff, that's the go-to. Walking Dead's the other go-to, just because, you know, it's all-encompassing, and everyone knows Walking Dead and stuff like that. And the comic is not identical to the TV show. There's a lot of differences.
Interesting.
So that you can appreciate both, which is, I guess, why both do really well.
Yeah. Now, Ian, when I came into the store, you and I had a really cool conversation about girls and reading comic books, women reading comic books. Yes. Some of the ones that you typically see women coming in and buying, you said mostly it's, you know, hey, they're in buying for their boyfriend or husband or whatever. But you do have some customers who are coming in buying for themselves. What are some of those comics that the women are tending to get into, or that you see maybe parents are buying and, you know, hoping that their daughters are getting into? Some of those things.
Saga is going to be at the top of that list. Mm-hmm. And it does well in the trades. It does well in the single issues. There's a book called Ms. Marvel. That one is, this will sound awfully stupid, it's pretty popular with the ladies. But it's about a teenage Muslim superhero who's got kind of stretchy, strong powers, and there's a lot of her family dynamic in there and things like that. And that's a pretty good seller. Harley Quinn is very popular with women. I'm not sure why, but
that was a question I had as well.
If you like it, they make comics for everybody, and I certainly am not a fan of all 1,500 comics that they publish every month, but there's a market for it, and whatever gets more people reading, I appreciate it. And we stock plenty of Harley Quinn. Mm-hmm. You know, X-Men is always been popular with women, because that's, I mean, the Avengers back in the day, you had the Wasp and then Scarlet Witch, and that was pretty much it for female characters. And Justice League had Wonder Woman, and then Black Canary showed up 50-some issues later. Mm-hmm. X-Men, the original incarnation, just had Jean Grey and towards the end of the run, Polaris. But X-Men now is, and for the last 30 years, I guess, has been a pretty strong female... I don't want to say female-centric, because you've got your Wolverines and Cyclops, something like that, but there's a lot of strong female characters in X-Men. Your Storms, your Jean Greys, Rogue, characters like that. I mean, if you remember the 90s cartoon,
yeah,
half the team was women.
Yeah.
And that's really unusual for Superbook, to some extent, even so today still.
But, interesting. Are you seeing a resurgence of Supergirl comics with the show having just finished its first season, going to be going into the second?
There's not as much. They just relaunched Supergirl. Like I said, with the DC relaunch, I think they're up to 2, maybe 3 issues of the relaunch now. It sells better than the previous series did, which got canceled about a year and a half ago. But it's shows. I don't know what the formula is for how shows translate to comics all the time, because sometimes there's things that we figured Supergirl would be enhanced by the show, and it hasn't really affected. Like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the comic for that doesn't sell terribly well. Movies do help with things, like, for example, Civil War. The comic and the movie are not terribly similar, but about a year and a half before the movie, when they announced the movie was going to be Civil War, sales of the trade paperback, because the original Civil War came out quite a few years back.
Right.
We were probably selling it, you know, once every month and a half, 2 months. It was an older story that, you know, those sales on those, when they're not quote-unquote classic stories, aren't always great. But there was a point where we were selling 2 or 3 a week of Civil War, and it still sells better now, even though the movie's been out, you know, for several months, than it did before. That one had some staying power.
And do you think that might have anything to do with the fact that it was a kind of contained story, you know, trade paperback, you can kind of buy it and read it, whereas something like Supergirl, both on the small screen, it's ongoing, so it requires a longer commitment.
Yes.
And the comic book requires a longer commitment.
I think so. There was a, like with the Batman Superman, it was a questionable movie. We can all agree to that.
Questionable that it was even a movie? Or, 'cause I would tend to agree that.
But the, a lot of elements for the Batman stuff came from Dark Knight Returns, which from 1986, a classic Batman story that, you know, you'd move a copy once in a while. It's an older story that, kind of got rediscovered by people when the Batman, it became clear that it was going to be, you know, older, angry Batman in the DC movies. And you might think differently, but to me, the two highlights of Batman Superman were Batman, other than the killing people part. But
which was, you know, a minor hurdle.
Yes. I thought Affleck was a good, bitter old Batman. And in the 5 minutes that Wonder Woman acted like Wonder Woman and not Catwoman, I found her enjoyable as well. When she was at the museum, like, doing the spying and stuff like that,
Catwoman?
Wonder Woman was acting like Catwoman.
Oh, well, Wonder Woman was acting like Catwoman. Yes, I was like, maybe that's in the 3-hour cut.
No.
I need the 60-minute cut of Batman.
it seemed like it was, like, parts from two different movies, because, it's like, Wonder Woman doesn't sneak around museums and do inner computer things.
The whole thing
seemed
like parts from other movies.
Well, yes.
And I agree. I like Affleck as Batman. My issue, and I think I mentioned this before, but because of the way they showed everyone so concerned about him being the vigilante and the Bat of Gotham, it didn't feel like he'd been around for 30 years fighting crime and hardened. They wanted the new, fresh Batman that everyone's afraid of and the old, hardened veteran, and it was like, which one?
Yes. Maybe, I could be wrong. I think there are references to him being out of action for several years.
It is, but then, like, it's weird that Clark Kent is still trying to generate stories about the bat vigilante of Gotham. The cops still shoot at him. I mean, what are they going to figure out?
Just like most newspaper stuff, he's holding on to the past.
Yeah, right. Like, let's do a classic story. Ian, what was the comic that got you into comics?
As a kid, I had aunt and uncle that occasionally got me a few comics here and there and things like that. That didn't really do it, though. What got me into comics, and this is going to be a stupid answer, but that's okay. Trading cards were big in the 90s.
Yes, they were, yeah.
At school, the kids had the 1994 X-Men trading cards.
Yeah. Yes, I remember those.
And I said, those look pretty snazzy. And then I started buying the Spider-Man trading cards. Still wasn't buying the comics yet. And that's after I got the Spider-Man. I was like, you know what? Because I knew some about those characters. I don't know why, because I didn't really have too much comic stuff. But it's like, oh, I kind of knew who Hobgoblin was for some reason. And things like that. And that's what started me buying actual proper comics off the newsstand. My first Spider-Man was Amazing Spider-Man 387. Which was the middle of a very confusing story, but I figured it out. It's comics these days. Here's my old man thing, even though I'm 34. Yeah. They feel Marvel particularly likes to do a seasonal comic model where they're constantly relaunching things about every year, year and a half. And they are a bit more continuity light in some cases. The story that I got in the middle of involved Peter Parker's parents being back from the dead.
Yeah, I remember that one.
The cover of 387 was the Vulture being young. And I knew he was old because of the trading card. And he was holding an old Spider-Man without his mask. And the resolution of the story, spoiler alert for a 22-year-old story, was that Peter Parker's parents were robots that had been built by the Chameleon under orders from the Green Goblin, who done it by videotape because the Green Goblin was dead at this point. And the Vulture used his age-absorbing technology that he had stolen to steal the life from the robots. And so Vulture became young but catatonic. And the robot parents died. And Spider-Man kind of went insane at going after Chameleon.
And they just don't write them like they did in the 90s anymore. What a shame.
And I didn't find the first part of that three-part story for a couple of years, but, you know, I figured it out.
I mean,
yeah,
this was before Wikipedia, too.
Yes. Yeah,
some stuff that's so confusing it doesn't matter where you come up. We're talking about the Phantasm movies. It doesn't matter whether you watch one or five. They're the same thing.
That's great. So, Ian, talk to us a little bit about your view of the comics versus the movies that have come out. And I guess
there are TV shows in there.
Yeah, TV shows too. I guess to get maybe a little more specific, things that you thought the comic books did really well and you wish it had translated onto the big screen, but then things that the big screen actually turned around and blew your mind a little bit more and you thought it was better there than in the comics.
My number one complaint about Marvel movies, and it's probably everyone's, maybe not everyone's, but number one complaint is the villains. They'll take, usually it's a decent villain, but generally the resolution is to kill them off at the end, and now whether they'll all come back in the Infinity stuff coming up, who knows. But it's usually not even much of a fight with the villain. It's kind of like, the heroes show up, everyone blasts something, and then it's done. Mm-hmm. And you have a lot more action through the movie than that. It's just, it feels like a cop-out. The Captain America movies, I think, have done the villains better on the whole, but, you know, I have no problems with, like, the fights in the Avengers, but Ultron was not very impressive. It was, mm-hmm. People complained about the way he talked and stuff, and that was made sense because it's based on Iron Man's brain patterns, but it just didn't feel like a big threat, even though, you know, he was going to destroy the Earth. It just didn't feel
That happens every other Wednesday in Marvel's Marvel Universe. I think that's a great point, Ian. I agree. The other weird thing, you mentioned they have good villains. I mean, in theory, in comic lore, they seem to take them, and this goes all the way back to Iron Man, and probably before, but particularly when they started the template for Marvel movies, they just take a villain, and they basically configure them so they're just a slightly more powerful same version of the hero.
Like, yes.
Iron Man's villain is, you know, the Ironmonger, is that right, in the first one? You know, it's Jeff Bridges in a big, beefy suit, but it's just a bigger Iron Man. And then the Incredible Hulk, the Abomination in the comics, is a much more tragic kind of contorted figure that's almost more like Frankenstein or something. He's Frankenstein and the monster combined. And in the movie, he's just a bigger, meaner Hulk.
Yeah.
And they pretty much carry that through all the way.
Yes, yes. And that's... It's... You know, it's the Spider-Man movies, with the exception of using Goblin and Goblins in four of the five of them so far, have tended to be more selective, but then they don't translate well. Like, I don't know anybody who thought that Electro in Amazing Spider-Man 2 was...
He was like he was making me have flashbacks to Batman and Robin.
Yes.
And not in a good way.
Like, Mr. Freeze, Bruce, your
helmet. Yes, exactly.
But, and on the other hand, Dr. Octopus in the second Spider-Man movie was probably the best villain, even though it wasn't technically a Marvel villain, it was a Sony thing. But that was probably my favorite.
They did a nice job with him. Yeah. And even less dorky than he was in the comics. Like, he was more imposing in the film.
Yeah. Well, I think part of that too is I feel like with Doc Ock in the movie, we got a backstory and we got a plausible story of, you know, this guy who's a genius who, you know, is involved in an accident and it's messing with his brain. Yes. There is something literally messing with his brain to make him do these things.
That one, it was an improvement from the original comic Doc Ock. In the original comics, he was a jerk scientist. There was an explosion and he decided to start robbing banks.
Mm-hmm. If that was pretty much it.
Yes. And they over the years, they gave him nuance. In the 90s, they actually gave you a backstory. It's like, okay, he was a fat kid who had a very overprotective mother and a very brutish stepfather. And he fell in love with a girl, but his mother said that they couldn't have a relationship because then she'd be alone after his stepfather died. And that's why he became such a bad character. And then, you know, several years ago, Marvel...
At least it was mommy issues instead of daddy issues. Yeah. All the other Marvel stuff. I guess all the bad guys have mommy issues and the heroes have daddy issues.
Marvel redeemed him to some extent. There was a series called Superior Spider-Man, I guess.
That's not the one where he tried to marry Aunt May, was it?
No. That was Amazing Spider-Man, I want to say 123.
Well, that's impressive.
Nice.
But
not the storyline, but you're...
don't look that up, anybody. Yeah. But
it was issue heard of it.
Superior Spider-Man, spoiler alert, was a story where after Doc Ock, even with his arms up, was a normal human, basically. And after getting punched in the head by superheroes like Spider-Man and the Hulk for a decade, his body started shutting down. So he started getting a more and more mechanical appearance. And at like Amazing Spider-Man 698, he was basically in an iron lung with octopus arms. Hmm. And he devised a plan, which they had like kind of laid the groundwork for it almost 100 issues before, where he was going to swap brains with Spider-Man. And he did. And so his body died with Spider-Man's brain in it, and nobody realized that there was a brain swap. And so there was a little bit of Peter Parker's memories in there, because he was going to just go off and keep doing bad stuff. But that convinced him that he should, you know, try and be a better Spider-Man. And so it launched a book called Superior Spider-Man, where it was Doc Ock being like, hey, I can do a better job than Peter Parker.
That's so weird.
I'm going to found this company called Parker Industries. They're going to make it a big success because Peter Parker's a smart guy, but he's never done anything with it. I'm going to make this huge company. We're going to do a lot of big science stuff. I'm going to put away the villains that Peter Parker can't put away. But he was, even though he was trying, and he was so arrogant that there were little things that got away from them, basically involving the Green Goblin. And so at the end of the story, the Green Goblin just basically took over New York under Doc Ock Spider-Man's nose. And I won't ruin the ending, but, you know, Doc Ock's not Spider-Man anymore, but it was a very good ending. And it was probably the most exciting, interesting, different Spider-Man story in all the time that I've been reading Spider-Man. It's well worth tracking down.
So how do you think the villains fare on the Netflix shows? Because I draw sort of a distinction between the two.
So we got Kingpin. Mm-hmm. We've got Purple Man. I have not yet watched
Doctor
Luke Cage.
Who. Yes. The evil Doctor Who.
Kingpin on Daredevil, when he first showed up, it was like, hey, what's wrong with this guy? He's kind of got some tics about him. He's socially
like a giant
awkward.
Man baby.
Yes, it was a giant man baby. And but he really grew on me. The car door scene was
yes.
Like, yes. Shocking. I was like, oh. And then you realize he's just spent all this brain power and effort to become the best at crime and pretending he's civil, that the part of his brain for socialization and acting normal just hasn't developed, is what it feels like.
Which was cool they took the time to show that. You know,
yes.
That's the difference you're talking about, is he's a character with motivations.
Yes.
He sees himself as a hero of the city, kind of like Daredevil does in a
yes.
different way, but mm-hmm. a pragmatic way. That makes him interesting.
Yes.
And I liked the villain. I liked David Tennant, actually. I thought he was the highlight of Jessica Jones.
I agree. The comic, until they had a series called Alias that was where they basically, Jessica Jones first showed up, they retconned her into having been a Marvel character for years and years. A retcon, if you don't know, is where, I know you guys know, but for the listeners, where they'll say, oh, hey, this character, Jessica Jones, she actually went to school with Peter Parker. Peter Parker remembers going to school with her and stuff like that. They kind of like fill in gaps in history with a character. And she was a private eye who had been a superhero, and she ran across Purple Man, and just like in the Netflix show, he got a hold of her and made her do some pretty bad stuff. Before that, Purple Man was a joke villain almost. Generally, he was Daredevil, but he was just a purple guy that would like control people and then rob banks, you know. And there was never any... Granted,
we need a bad guy, Purple Man.
Yes.
Be right up there with Photosynthesis Girl or Matter
yes.
Eater Lad.
There was never any psychological drama with him or anything like that. The previous Daredevil series actually introduced some interesting Purple Man stuff, but generally he's been in the like Jessica Jones sphere of influence since that Alias series started. I want to say in 98 was when that was happening. Hmm. But, yeah, he was, and I'm not a Doctor Who guy, so I wasn't terribly familiar with David Tennant, but I thought he was great, and by far and away the highlight, because Jessica, all the Netflix Marvel series to me feel like they're 3 episodes too long.
Hmm. That's a fair point.
And I was really dragging before Purple Man showed up, and then he showed up, and it's like, okay.
He liked the whole thing up a little bit, and he was
yes.
imposing, which I thought maybe,
yes.
you know, improved it.
Yes.
Partway through Luke Cage now. Have you watched any of it, Nathan?
I have not yet. It's on my to-do list.
And it's kind of, for me, it's falling in that thing where they're creating the villains are psychologically realistic to a degree for a comic book storyline.
Right.
Okay. I'm not mean that dismissively, but you know, they're trying to make them psychologically realistic. But in doing so, particularly with Luke Cage, they're getting to a point where now we're fighting evil crime bosses and politicians. And they're just not... they're not as interesting. I think the Purple Man thing is interesting because he's a little bit more of an over-the-top villain,
yes.
you know. And even the Kingpin has elements of being over-the-top. And
yes.
I think you have to have a little bit of that.
Yeah.
I'm not the most familiar with old classic Luke Cage, but the main character, are they calling him Cottonmouth on the show?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The guy does an excellent job, and he's a very well-realized character,
yeah.
but he just...
I don't think there was too much in the way of the political with him back in the day. I could be wrong, but
the
I
political
think
establishes
like
itself without really spoiling anything. It's a relationship he has with somebody else. It's
okay.
a familiar relationship where they're hitting it from two sides. He's the crime boss, and you have a politician over on the side. So
okay.
he's not the politician character, but he's sort
right.
of in cahoots.
Okay. Okay. Everything's got to be political these days.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Well, I think it works in the context of the show. Kingpin played those angles too in
yes,
Daredevil.
Right.
And you're seeing heroes fight not just the villains, but an entire way of thinking or an entire city full of corruption.
I would say, though, since Kingpin did it so well, maybe wait until season two of Luke Cage to do the political
fight. We need a flying dragon or something. Some Fin Fang Foom.
Yeah, that's right.
I think I'm blowing the Netflix budget pretty wide
open. I mean, hey, with Stranger Things there.
That's right.
True.
They do a crossover. Awesome.
What we wanted to do, Ian, is, we wanted to kind of just talk about comics in general, and we bounced around a lot. Want to focus in a little bit more on Doctor Strange.
Okay.
We have a new Doctor Strange movie coming out. Well, really, a Doctor Strange movie coming out. I don't know if we can say a new one.
72 TV movie. And like the full moon at Dr. Mordred, which is actually a pretty faithful Doctor Strange movie, except for the fact he's not called Doctor Strange, has any of the villains from Doctor Strange, and is not affiliated with Marvel in any way. Otherwise,
other than that.
Yeah. And it was made for like $50.
Hey, sometimes those are some of the best movies out there, man.
There's a stop motion fight between a T-Rex skeleton and a mastodon skeleton. Not even the whole animal.
That's awesome. But we do want to kind of hone in on Doctor Strange. And Ian, just kind of revealing all the cards, you said that this was probably the character you were the least familiar with.
Yes.
And I loved your answer because you were like, you know, Tony Stark, he's a sciencey dude, you know, so I get the techs and the gadget and all that. Doctor Strange is magic. So, like, who really gets magic and understands that?
Right. Even the most of Marvel's characters got their powers from science, whether it's the X-Men, and most of that's radiation related.
Mm-hmm.
But, bitten by a spider, designed armor, gamma bomb went off, super soldier serum. They're almost all of them are sciencey. And even if it's a little outlandish, it makes sense. To me, magic doesn't really make sense. And I think a lot of people feel that way, which is why Doctor Strange traditionally has been a bit of a hard sell.
Mm. Fair enough. Talk about because you said you've actually gotten into the new series that's out a little bit. Talk to us about the new series and what's kind of brought you in a little bit more with it. And then we'll kind of jump back and talk about Doctor Strange throughout history.
A big part of that is the writer. His name's he's a guy named Jason Aaron. He writes the Star Wars series at Marvel. He writes, I'm going to say, 4 or 5 other series as well.
Mm.
He's a very busy man. But it's a good take on Doctor Strange where it's, you know, yeah, it's magical, but it just works,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Sure.
That's the best way to put it. The art, Chris Bacciello is the artist on the first arc. I'm not a big fan of his, but he works with Doctor Strange. I mean, it's his style. It's a little bit exaggerated, but you know, where on a Spider-Man book, it looks a little off. On a Doctor Strange book, we got a lot of weird things going on and little monsters in the background, stuff like that.
Maybe helps his costume look less garish too.
Yes.
I mean, you draw that realistic, he's going to look a little too fancy for superhero fighting.
Yes.
Yeah. Talk to us a little bit about the history of Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange, he first appeared in Strange Tales 110 back in, I guess, 1963. It was created by Stan Lee and Steve Ditko. Stan Lee, you know, is the guy that wrote everything at Marvel and claims credit for creating everything. Ditko is the guy who was the artist on Spider-Man for the first 35 issues of his existence. And Lee had kind of thought they should do a magic character, and he thought Ditko would be the guy to do it because Ditko was good at drawing weird stuff. The original Spider-Man, most people haven't really read the old Spider-Man. When they think Spider-Man, they probably think John Romita, where he's, you know, muscular Spider-Man and stuff like that. But Ditko always drew Spider-Man as really skinny,
mm-hmm.
because it was like, oh, he's a teenager who got bit by a spider. He's still a scrawny teenager.
Sure.
And weird's not really the word I'd use to describe his Spider-Man and Doctor Strange, but it's a lot different than the stuff that came later. And it's, you know, it's good. It's really It's really good. He created designs for most of the classic Spider-Man villains and things like that that are still the designs today in a lot of cases. Hmm. I mean, Green Goblin has a glider instead of a mechanical broomstick.
That's an improvement.
Yes. But basically, he looks the same. Doc Ock, you know, basically looks the same. Mm-hmm. Mysterio, Electro, Vulture, they all basically look the same as they did. And every time a creator goes back and it's like, oh, hey, we're going to make Electro look, update him for the 90s or the 2000s, and we're going to take all the little weird spiky Electro things off his uniform, because that just looks silly. Yeah, it looks silly, but it's iconic, too, so they always come back.
Hmm. It's like an angry daffodil.
Yes. But Doctor Strange, he was a neurosurgeon who was in a car accident. He was also a jerk. That's kind of relevant.
Right.
And he spent all of his money trying to get his hands fixed. And his hands were surgically repaired, but he wasn't able to do surgery anymore because, mm-hmm. you know, it's like you can drink a glass of water, but you can't do all the fine touch stuff. This was in the days before, you know, people used robots for surgery and things like that.
Right.
Otherwise, he would have never become the Sorcerer Supreme. But eventually, he gets a tip that, oh, there's this place in Tibet or the Far East or wherever that, you know, you can meet the Ancient One and learn some magic and he might be able to fix you. And so Doctor Strange goes out there and he learns magic and he doesn't use it to fix his hands, but he ends up using it to fight evil.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Doctor Strange.
And that seems to be a pretty common theme throughout all of Doctor Strange going back into the reboot. So I'm trying to think, are there any that have like really, as all these comics kind of put out new issues and do these reboots, are there any that take a dramatic change from their origin story?
The Doctor Strange, there was a series called Doctor Strange the Oath that came out a couple years ago. I don't remember how many, but it was written by a guy named Brian K. Vaughan, who's the guy that writes Saga.
Yeah.
It was drawn by Marcos Martin, who is one of the best artists out there for my money. He did a pretty good run on Spider-Man. His style looks like the Ditko style, but it's a little more detailed. It's a minimalist, but not in mm-hmm. a bad way
sure.
style. And this, it established like a villain from the time Doctor Strange had gotten his strange powers. The surgeon that fixed his hands ends up figuring into that series. Don't want to spoil it because he's going to be a character in the movie. His name's Nicodermus West, I think.
Okay. Who is he played by in the movie?
He is played by Miklas Stahlberg.
Okay.
Is that a...
Yeah, not ringing a bell, but I don't really know that much. I was about to ask you, who is... I remember reading the comics, but I was not a huge, huge Doctor Strange fan. Who is his primary villain in the comic world?
The primary Doctor Strange villain is the Dread Dormammu.
Yes, that's right.
He is a basically a big magenta guy with a fire head.
Mm-hmm.
Not like Ghost Rider's fire head. There's no skull. There's just a head made of fire.
And mm-hmm. he's in the movie? Is he...
They haven't confirmed him as casting. I don't know how you can do a Dr. Strange.
Mads Mikkelsen looks like he's the villain, right? From Hannibal.
Mads Mikkelsen is playing Caecilius.
Okay.
He is basically a throwaway Doctor Strange character. He, after Dormammu, the main Doctor Strange villain, I guess, would be Baron Mordo.
Mm-hmm.
He is being played by, I can't pronounce the name, Chiwetel?
Ejiofor?
Yes.
From 12 Years a Slave.
Yes. He's playing Baron Mordo. In the comics, Caecilius works for Mordo, and he only appeared in like 7 or 8 issues of Strange Tales or Doctor Strange over the past 50-some years. Now, I assume he'll be back because, you know, he's in the movie.
Yeah, let's grab this guy and they can do whatever they want with him. And, you know, they don't have to worry about comic people screaming about it, I suppose. Yeah,
but Baron Mordo, he was a sorcerer who was training with the Ancient One and was jealous of Doctor Strange. And they've tweaked the origin a few times. I think the original one was that he was going to kill the Ancient One, and then Doctor Strange stopped him, and that's when the Ancient One said, okay, Doctor Strange, you're my guy. And they've tweaked it a little bit over the years, but that's basically what happened.
But no Morgana Le Fay like the 72 movie.
if she's fought him, which she should have at some point, because she's magic.
Right.
But I don't remember it happening. Generally, Doctor Strange has a bunch of minor villains that are not memorable, and you know, then you've got your Dread Dormammu and your Baron Mordo.
Yeah, I think they made that up. I think the people that made the TV movie, and then they basically took that and turned it into The Sorcerer's Apprentice a few years ago with Nicolas Cage.
Exactly.
That was the second bootleg Doctor Strange movie. Well,
Morgan Le Fay is a Marvel villain.
Yeah.
Who generally deals with like the Avengers. And Doctor Strange, he teamed up with them a time or two, but he joined the Avengers within the last 10 years. Before that,
is he know, like the back call guy that once the phone chain goes through? Like, if you really need one more guy, call Doctor Strange.
He stopped being the Sorcerer Supreme for a little while, and because he started using dark magic, and he's like, I can't be Sorcerer Supreme because I'm using dark magic. So the title passed on to somebody else. And so he's like, well, I'm not doing anything. I guess I'll help the Avengers since they need to teleport places. And so Doctor Strange joined the Avengers.
And, why not?
Yeah. It's like,
but then I'm useless because
he still did something like some magic-y stuff.
But the title had to pass on to Taco Supreme, right?
Actually passed to Brother Voodoo. Brother Voodoo. He was a, it's exactly
that's
what he
pulling
sounds
somebody
like
out of the shelf. I remember. Yeah.
Yes. He was the Sorcerer Supreme briefly and,
he got fired.
Yes. And so Doctor Strange got the title back when, I think he proved that he didn't need dark magic to stop Brother Voodoo's evil brother, who was, some kind of also voodoo ghost thing.
Figured they could just hug it out.
Yes.
Just need understanding. So, that's dark magic.
The spirit of the Ancient One came back because he'd been dead at this point. He's like, you've proved yourself. Because at this point, the spirit of the Ancient One, it's kind of like
Santa Claus.
Well, I was going to say the Force Ghost. He's like the Force Ghost. And so he'll show up occasionally and, you know, advise Doctor Strange and things like that. So he showed up. It's like, yes, you can be Sorcerer Supreme again.
So let's talk about the Ancient One in comparison to the movie, because that's Tilda Swinton in the movie, right?
Yes.
Versus the historically Ancient One has been Asian, right?
Yes, it was a Asian man. The movie version, I suspect, in Marvel's, no one's going to come out and say, this is why. He was Tibetan in the comics, and a big part of Marvel money has been coming from China because movies will open in China and do really well over there. And that, until recently, wasn't really a big movie market. But if the Doctor Strange movie had a Tibetan monk in it, the Chinese probably would not let them screen it there. I'm guessing. And I think that's probably the change. Also, they like to interject, gender and ethnic diversity in when they can. Because the original comics had some of it, but they didn't have a ton of it. But
And I don't know how. I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see Tilda Swinton do it. She can do it.
Yes.
Tilda Swinton could have played an Asian man in Doctor Strange, and I mean, she would have probably succeeded at it.
They, the Ancient One, even though he's such a big part of Doctor Strange, he's not a character that was around constantly. It's, you know, you had your origin, and then you'd see him once in a while, and the Force Ghost Ancient One shows up occasionally, but he's not a real present character.
I do like how Marvel is in the Marvel movies. I do think one of their strengths, we talked about the villains being the weak, I think the casting of the mentor figures has been pretty good.
Like, yes.
having Jeff Bridges in the original Iron Man kind of mixed it up a little bit, and having Tilda Swinton or Michael Douglas in Ant-Man. I mean, those are some nice
Anthony Hopkins as
Odin. Those I think those are some of the stronger things they've done.
And Robert Redford in
In Captain America,
Winter Soldier. And I don't know if they were had to stretch originally to get those characters, but Robert Redford, there's an interview with him where he said, my grandkids wanted me to be in a Marvel movie, so I called Marvel up and they said, yeah, we can do something.
That's probably why Anthony Hopkins is in the next Transformers.
What?
Yeah, really? I mean, well, that, and you talk about...
I understand Thor, but...
Right. Well, you figure last Transformers, talk about the China money, that was 90% like Chinese advertising. Yeah. I went against my better judgment after everyone I told no one to watch the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie and rented it for my kids the other night, which promptly fell asleep in it, and then I followed suit. And that was like Chinese marketing all over the place, too.
World of Warcraft, too. Yeah. I mean, you and I had a
I blame China for the bad movies.
That's awesome.
Sorry, sounded kind of Trumpy. I'm sorry.
China. So let's talk a little bit about things that you're noticing in the movie here, or the three of us that we're noticing. So Nathan,
in the trailers for the
in
movie.
The trailers, yes.
Yeah. We have to go off.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, just, you know, quick word to everyone. You know, none of us have seen the movie, so anything that we say, because we got blowback when we did the Star Wars episode, and people are like, "You're spoiling the movie," and I had to like get on Facebook and be like, we can't be spoiling the movie. We haven't seen the movie.
I was completely wrong. I think I made a comment that it would be interesting to see. It looks like there's a stormtrooper that learns the Force. I was referring to Finn, because in the trailer it seemed like he was holding a lightsaber. Most people who aren't Jedis don't hold that.
Right.
But, you know, what did I know?
So that means instead of a spoiler warning, you need a speculation warning.
A speculation warning, right, because sometimes I say things that turn out to be right.
That's right. So speculation warning. So, Nathan, you brought up Tilda Swinton as the Ancient One. Other things that you guys are noticing with your knowledge of Doctor Strange that look interesting. I mean, I got to say right off the bat, I'm stoked that Benedict Cumberbatch is playing Doctor Strange. I think he's a fantastic actor. And I think he's, regardless of how the rest of the movie turns out, I think he's going to do a good job with the part, because I think he does a good job in general with things that he does. Yeah. Thoughts on that?
I think he's going to be great. I will say, I personally think that I've seen him in movies where he's been very good and he hasn't necessarily rescued the movie or elevated it, per se, into darkness. I don't dislike that movie, but it wasn't like immediate Cumberbatch elevated that movie. Mm-hmm. The Imitation Game's a very good performance in a movie that's kind of mediocre. I mean, that's my feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I have never seen Benedict Cumberbatch in a movie, so I can only base it off of the trailer, and he sounds like a fancy pants, so that fits the Doctor Strange character.
Yeah, he's got the look.
And he looks like him. He sounds like he should, so I don't see a lot of movies that aren't comic related. I'll tell you that now.
Fair enough.
I think he can pull off that kind of, like you were saying, that kind of elevated regalness. It's going to seem weird if anyone else did it. At one point... Yeah. Joseph Gordon-Levitt was cast as Doctor Strange, and I think that could have worked, but I mean, it would have been a very different kind of a thing. I appreciate that he isn't a 26-year-old or 30, you know, I mean, not that Cumberbatch is old by any stretch, but like, he's at least there in this ballpark of a character that feels a little bit more mature.
The comic version, they kind of de-aged him at one point, but he's, you know, back to, it feels like he's early 40s.
Mm-hmm.
The animated Spider-Man show that's on now, I'm a little familiar with it. He seems like he's early 20s in that show, which to me is odd.
Yeah,
yeah, you're the Sorcerer Supreme at 22. Yeah.
Yes, there there's not really the gravitas when it's
Well, and
I just graduated college and now I'm Sorcerer Supreme.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and you have, I mean, the whole kind of point of it, the reason why he was so arrogant was, I mean, it was like a house, you know, he was so arrogant because he was so good at what he did.
He was the best surgeon.
Right. So, I mean, it seems weird that you've got, you know, a 22-year-old who's the best neurosurgeon around.
So when I look at the trailer, the thing I see off the bat – now, of course, the standard thing, and I've said this myself, is people are saying, oh, it looks like Inception.
Christopher Nolan.
Not so much it looks like Inception, but it definitely does have that kind of Nolan-esque – what I see is not that. What I see is a clear effort to move away, at least in the trailers, from anything that looks really over-the-top dark fantasy or magical or fantastical. Like, in most times, if you were trying to sell a movie on the fantastical elements, you would see a lot of the magic, you know, shooting out of your hands, or the monsters or the creatures. None of that. Like, all of it is very almost, which fits with the story a little bit. A little bit more Middle Eastern, a little bit more New Agey, a little bit more like I'm tapping into the powers of my mind, you know? So it's more like paranormal than supernatural, although that's not really in keeping with the comics. And I suspect that maybe when the movie comes out, we will find that it is more fantastical.
The original Doctor Strange had a more mysticism and Easternism than the comics did later on. The fact that there's not extreme, over-the-top, magic-y, monster-y stuff, I'm happy with, because, like I said earlier, I'm not a big magic person, because it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And it wasn't really a criticism, just that I could see they're going that direction, which is different, which is probably going to make it seem a little less campy than it might. Yeah.
And if you get too fan... Even though in the comics, you know, Marvel will publish... crazy magic comic with, you know, like a school of superpower kids comic with and everything in between. But when you have a shared movie universe that's not, you know, 80 different titles a month and you're trying to link it all together, I think that, yeah, you can have different kinds of movies. Marvel's doing that a lot, but there's a point where it might be too different because, of course, Doctor Strange is going to be in the Infinity War and probably other stuff coming down the line. And it just would fit too awkwardly, I think, if it was too out there.
I think it's interesting, too, the choices they've gone director and writer-wise. They have Scott Derrickson, who's primarily done horror films with a almost religious supernatural bent. He did Exorcism of Emily Rose, he did Sinister, and he did a movie called Deliver Us from Evil, which all deal with paranormal but in a quasi-realistic way.
Okay.
And the writer, I believe, I think it's still the writer, is Robert Cargill, who used to write for... movie website, but now he's done a couple books that were taking a lot of like folklore and stories and mixing them together, genies and things like that, but trying to do it in a semi realistic way. So I think that it's interesting they tapped into that, as opposed to, it's always, I think, interesting, like they hit Kenneth Branagh up for Thor. It's like, well, what are they thinking? And then you see when Thor comes out, this is what they were thinking.
Right.
Or you know, I don't know what they were thinking when they tapped Ang Lee for the Hulk. But, you know...
they weren't thinking. That's why they had to redo it.
I personally like the Hulk, but I don't know what they expected from somebody who's more of an arty, thoughtful director. He was going to do something weird, which he did. And I kind of liked it, but...
Yeah. I liked Sam Elliott in the Hulk.
You know what, though? It's funny because everyone seems to think of that as the more, like, low-key Hulk than the Incredible Hulk. But there are more action sequences. I showed my child, not the entire movie, but just the sequence where he's out in the desert. I'm like, the Hulk actually does break more stuff, and he's on screen more in the Ang Lee version. Now, granted, there's 45 minutes of analyzing his childhood also.
Right.
It's not so good, but he does break some tanks.
And making his father the Absorbing Man.
Yes.
That was, wow, Nick Nolte was really off the chain in that movie.
Yeah.
So just off the reservation completely. I sometimes like that. If you're not going to do it to the story, just go nuts.
That's right.
Just Howard the Duck the crap out of that thing. But you're not going to see anything like that come out of the Marvel. They've got it too tight. They've got too tight a leash on it for good and bad.
Well, and I think, you know, because again, everything at this point we know is going to be leading to the Infinity Wars, you know, and I have a friend, he and I talk a lot about comics. You know, right now, if you think about the lineup of people that you have fighting against Thanos, they're screwed. I mean, they're going to get crushed. You know, you need a Doctor Strange. You need someone who has Squirrel that. Group. Yeah, exactly. but, you know, so you can see that they're trying to build up and that they are building in that direction and moving in that direction.
So to get a turf war started, DC or Marvel?
For the comics?
Or yeah, let's start with the comics and then we'll move to what I'm clearly pointing at.
Okay. Comics, Marvel. I like a lot of the new stuff that DC's doing, but I'm at heart a Marvel guy. I've got, you know, most of the old Marvel series back to their number one issue or pretty close to it back in the early 60s. And
now, which one had the peanut butter barbarian? Was it? I'm not making this up. This is not. This is legit. Quick, someone Google it. I'm thinking it was or was it Marvel? Maybe he was like in cahoots with Man Thing. Man Thing or Swamp Thing had some kind of connection to a character. I don't remember his first name. I just remember the peanut butter barbarian part.
Just keep talking.
Yeah, okay. I'll look it up. Fair enough. So now, with DC trying to seemingly emulate Marvel on the big screen, how do you think that's working out? Are you excited for any of that?
I'm going to be positive and say yes. Yes, I am.
What specifically are you excited for?
I didn't expect a follow-up. The Wonder Woman's going to be a period piece for World War One. It looks like. Maybe it'll be back and forth. I'm not sure. I really liked the first Captain America.
I did, too. Which, I enjoyed that.
But Captain America movies have gotten progressively better, it seems to me. But I really liked the first one. Anyway, it's not like they started out bad and got better. It's they started pretty good and they got better.
They just had different tones, which yes. is nice. They've yes. all been a different kind of movie.
Yes. And the Justice League, I saw the, was it about 2 months ago, the trailer for that came out, and it just didn't feel right.
It doesn't. No, I don't think so either. To me, it doesn't. No. Part of that may be what my personal reactions to Batman versus Superman, it just looks like more the same. They needed to put something out there that's like, guys, we understand, but I guess they're locked in at this point.
Right. They could still put a guys, we understand thing at the beginning of the movie.
I love what DC's doing, though, on the small screen.
Yes. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is, it's one of those things I watch because I've been watching it. But this season, we're only two episodes in, but I've enjoyed the Ghost Rider. The new Ghost Rider, it's...
Nicolas Cage again?
No. Darn it. Robbie Reyes is the character. Okay.
That's right, that's
he's
right.
In the comics, he's like a teenager in maybe early 20s in Los Angeles.
We have a teenage Ghost Rider, too.
And he has a muscle car, and that catches on fire. And I was not fond of the comic, but the version on S.H.I.E.L.D. has been pretty fun. They've taken, I think, some personality and powers aspects from the original Ghost Rider stuff and kind of put it in with this guy. Other than that, I mean, it's what else does Marvel have on the spot?
Not Marvel, DC. I'm saying DC seems to be. Oh, yeah. That's where I enjoy what Marvel DC is doing.
Just, DC, I'm not a big fan of Supergirl. I don't think I'm the target demographic, but if people like it, that's fine. But Flash, I love the Flash.
I think the Flash is, and this is my personal opinion, it might be the best comic book thing on TV or movies that I've seen that like is so consistent.
Yes, and the thing with Flash, I mean, a couple of characters to start I wasn't thrilled with. At this point, it's weird to watch a show where you like everybody. They're all really likable people.
And it legitimately proves that you can make a character that is flawed, because Barry Allen in the right. Flash show is very flawed and makes some incredibly ridiculous decisions, but you kind of buy it because it's built into a character who still, at his heart, is a good person.
Yes.
The DC movies are like, oh, we got to make him edgier and darker, all these guys, and the Flash is proving them wrong on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now they whine like crazy on Arrow, though. I don't know. Arrow's getting whinier and whinier by the season.
I'm not a big Arrow guy. No,
but the Flash is, yeah.
And Legends of Tomorrow, quite frankly, if Captain Cold wasn't on Legends of Tomorrow, I probably wouldn't watch it.
It's kind of fun, but it's almost like a throwback to, I feel like that's a 90s era kind of
show.
Yes,
yes.
Yeah. It's nostalgic to me in that way, back when David Hasselhoff played Nick Fury.
That's awesome.
That did happen.
Yeah. So Peanut Butter Barbarian is...
Didn't make that up, right?
From Marvel. Okay. Yep. From Marvel. Korek, fictional character in the Marvel Universe, emerged in a jar of peanut butter, partially consumed by Andy Kale. So that's all I'm going to read because that's all the...
My brain is a reservoir of junk.
I heard the words you said, but I don't understand. Was Andy Kale related to Jennifer Kale?
Let's see.
Jennifer Kale's a magician at Marvel. And I think she interacted with Swamp Thing.
Or Man Thing.
Or Man Thing. Yes. Yes.
No relation. Now, I do like Swamp Thing. We need a Swamp Thing should be the next WB show. I still have a soft spot for the Wes Craven movie from the 80s.
all right. Korik is a young warrior king of the extra-dimensional barbarian land of Katharta.
And how did he end up in peanut butter?
And I'm just reading his biography here.
I'm just reading the words.
This is Wikipedia, like, all over my phone, so you guys can Wikipedia this later. Became the companion of the sorceress Dakima and Jennifer Kale.
Okay.
So Cork and his warriors began to cross into other dimensions due to disturbance in various dimensions caused by a series of activities within the Man-Thing's... I have no idea. I'm just going to stop there.
Hopefully that wasn't a body part, the next word. I bet you that's a guy Stan Lee doesn't take credit for.
That's great. Oh, man. Guys, we are running down on time. This has been so much fun. Once again, Ian, thank you for joining us.
Sure.
You know, to our listeners out there, check out Casey's Comics on Facebook. Stop by the store. Give them a call. Like I said, just as our listeners can tell, you know, just a great base of knowledge here of comics. And like I said, I had a great time with you last week, just half hour, 45 minutes chatting about comics. And again, over an hour today talking about comics. And
you're going to go back and dig up some of those Peanut Butter Barbarian comics now.
I think they probably hit the 50 cent box along.
And never came out.
This is what we give away for free. Free comic book day, you stick it in the back.
This is what we're really giving to our listeners.
Take as many as you want. Free can of peanut butter with each person.
That's great. So again, just once we sign off here, stay tuned real quick, and we're going to go ahead and just recap the contest for our listeners. Ladies and gentlemen, you just finished listening to Ian Racetrick, and so great having him on, wasn't it, Nathan? Just getting
awesome.
That information, and it was wonderful. So just a reminder that we are going to be giving away, it's a total of 6 comics. So one of them is going to be Doctor Strange, the first issue of the new series, and then we're going to be giving away 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 of... the Illuminati. So that's actually the group, for those of you who are comic nerds, you'll remember that's the group that actually sent Hulk into space, which started the whole Planet Hulk series. And for those of you who aren't comic nerds, there you go. Piece of history for you. So we're going to be sending those out to you. Remember, we're going to be looking for 3 iTunes reviews. And really, the iTunes reviews are just to set us up higher on the listen. It gets us out there. We are actually, when you Google us, we are top on the charts in Google. Thanks to Nathan having a unique name already pre-set up.
Pop culture's a ninja, you know, yeah. There we are.
So we are actually up on the list when you Google us. But this just puts us out there even more when people are looking for reviews and just general entertainment. So go ahead, send in the reviews. Again, if we get 3 reviews, we'll send them out to all 3 people. If we get more than that, then you'll be put into a drawing and we'll send them out. And then we want 2 Twitter reposts as well. So again, more than 2 and we'll put you in the drawing. So anything else you wanted to add, Nathan?
Yeah, we also this week, we have a kind of another side podcast coming.
Yes.
For Phantom Galaxy. It's a podcast that I'm kind of doing on the side. So we're going to double up on some of this stuff. It's going to be specifically more geared towards science fiction, fantasy, and horror. It's going to allow us to talk more about books and movies and things like that, but to kind of catch some of the stuff that we can't always catch on Pop Culture Ninja.
Yeah.
So for a while, it's going to be posting with Pop Culture Ninja,
yep.
But we'll also have our own area for it. Probably most of the information will be coming through the Twitter and the same Facebook page, but
yep.
It'll give you a few more opportunities to hear some more stuff and really just increase our content, which we're kind of trying to do across the board.
Yeah, absolutely. And with that said, we are going to start posting, reposting these back on the These Go to 11 podcast as well, because starting next year, we are actually going to be merging the podcast. You know, we talked about this on and off for a while. We're going to be having, you know, these kind of site set up where everything is together under the one name of Drunken Peasant Ministries. So we are going to be starting to repost these back on these GoTo11. So for those of you who are following us,
and this won't affect much where you find us. So we'll still
exactly, yeah.
We're going to keep the Facebook page. We're going to keep the Twitter page.
Exactly, and we are keeping the separate podcast feeds probably until like February. So, you know, we'll be making this announcement and we'll be helping everyone to kind of transition over to that general umbrella.
And at that point, probably Phantom of Galaxy would be primarily under both Pop Culture Ninja and its own.
Correct.
Podbean.
So. Yep. So, all right. Thanks, guys. And we'll catch you later.
Take care.
Really shook the pillars of heaven, didn't we, Wayne?